Savannah is a philanthropic town, and the tip of the spear, so to speak, is the United Way of the Coastal Empire, which raises multi-millions annually to distribute to and support dozens of local charities. Two of the local United Way's leaders, President and CEO Brent Grant and 2021-2022 campaign chair Celia Russo-Turner, are our guests on this episode of the Commute Podcast, presented as always by National Office Systems. Good day and welcome to The Commute. My name is Adam Van Brummer, and I am your host for this twice-weekly podcast featuring interviews with Savannah's biggest newsmakers. Today is Tuesday, September the 21st, and joining me on this edition are Bryn Grant and Cecilia Russo-Turner with United Way of the Coastal Empire. Also, we'll preview this week's highly anticipated Savannah Jazz Festival by talking with Stephanie Nakasian, who is a real-life diva, at least a Savannah diva. She and two other female jazz vocalists will team with Savannah Jazz Orchestra to play the jazz festival this Saturday night. As always, as we do at this point of the podcast, I need to first tell you about our sponsor, National Office Systems. Comfort at work is important. It impacts our productivity, not to mention our well-being. The team at National Office Systems are Savannah's experts in office design and outfitting. They work with top quality suppliers such as Dirt Modular Interiors and Herman Miller Furniture to deliver the best experience for you at the office. Learn more by visiting www.natoffsys.com. That's NATOFFSYS.com. Joined on the commute today by Bryn Grant and Celia Russo-Turner, who are with the United Way of the Coastal Empire. Of course, Bryn is the executive director of the United Way of the Coastal Empire. And if you picked up the paper a week ago Sunday, you would have saw a column from, or an op-ed, I'm sorry, from Cecilia, who is heading the annual United Way of the Coastal Empire campaign. She's a campaign chairperson. And what for some background on that, every year United Way raises money for the community fund, which goes to fund all kinds of things. I just pulled some notes out of Cecilia's op-ed. 207,000 people helped in 2020, 89 programs, 54 agencies. They do a lot of good in the community. And every year when they launch their annual campaign, I want to have them on and let them talk it up because they're invaluable to us here in this community. So Cecilia and Bryn, first of all, thank you and welcome. And second of all, tell us about this campaign and maybe why it's different or the same or better or worse or whatever, however you want to categorize it compared to maybe other campaigns.
Wow. Different would be a good word. Thank you, Adam, so much. Thanks for having both of us on. And I am very, very proud and honored to be the campaign chair this year for the United Way fall campaign and for its fundraising efforts between 2021 and 2022. But yes, you are right. It is very different, and it has been different since Bryn and I both started. So Bryn was, I guess, hired in December, right along the time that I agreed to co-chair. And so I was kind of baptized with fire. I was able to serve under Chief Terry Enoch last year, and we learned a whole lot. And a lot of the lessons that we learned, we have brought forward, and we have strategically made this campaign. We've named it Forward United because that is what we're doing. But yes, things do look different. They are great and they're fun. And it is a tradition of how many years, Bryn, that we've had a campaign?
Since 1938, there's been a campaign in this community.
For decades and decades. So yes, it's exciting, but it is quite a challenge doing, as you know, fundraising at this level. During these times, but we had these challenges and our needs in Savannah and these four counties. So it's Chatham, Bryan, Effingham, and Liberty. And we've had these challenges before a pandemic even decided to come about. So we have a lot to do for our communities. And it's just this work of the United Way and the mission is just overwhelming. And I'm so proud to be part of it. So I'll let you kind of talk a little bit about about the campaign.
Well, we're thrilled to have Cecilia Russo-Turner. And I will share that, you know, she doesn't do anything that she doesn't give her whole heart to. And from the moment things kicked off last year, from serving as support to Chief Enoch to from January 1st, and probably even well before that. She's been in our office, every single week for hours at a time, working on how to be ready for this year. Now, I think in August, I think the Delta variant took us all a little by surprise. We were really excited to be gearing up for in person, and some of that has been pulled back. And I think it took us until mid-August to really maybe accept that and start really adjusting. Thankfully, it's still better than last year in that we are having more in-person, but safe in-person meetings than last year at this time, I think. And I think that's due to the vaccination being, available. This time last year, it wasn't. So we're excited about what we're seeing so far, and we're thrilled to have her leading our effort, and Cindy Robinette as her vice chair.
Can we talk a little bit about the process? Obviously, the goal is a big number. It's in the eight figures, right? And every year it seems like it's a little bit of a race to the finish. Usually you make it. Usually you exceed it. Certain people in this community are going to give. They're going to, every year they budget, they're going to write you a check. But what are some of the challenges to maybe attracting new dollars or getting additional dollars out of donors? How does that whole process? You peel back the curtain for us a little bit, talk about the process of raising money through this campaign.
Sure. I'll talk a little bit about that. Some of the things that I brought to the campaign this year is I've reached deep to know what I know, and what I know is seafood. So a lot of my philosophies that I live by have been no grit, no pearl. So I know that a lot of hard work is going to be a wonderful and beautiful result. But going along with that same seafood analogy, we've talked about casting a wider net and asking those in all four counties, all four communities, that if they've never given before, to please consider giving this year. We looked at the overall numbers of how many residents are in this footprint, and it's well over 400,000. And our numbers are small. Our numbers are under 15,000 of those who participate or have participated in the past couple of years. While we so appreciate those individuals, and a lot of those donors, to your point, are consistent and loyal donors, and we do appreciate that, but we would like to appeal to all of those, every dollar counts. And we literally mean that. So if we can move that number from 13, 14, 15,000 up just by a couple of thousand more, the impact of the dollars and the participation is so important. If we can increase that participation, we can increase the help that we give. So that 207,000 that you spoke about earlier of how many were that we were able to help. Right. We could help those exponentially if we just get so many more to become involved. So that's what we're really asking, is casting that wider net, that if you've given before, we thank you and we appreciate that and want you to continue to give. And if you're so lucky, give a little bit more, because the challenges are a little bit more. They're a lot more. But if you can give more, that is what we would like. And if you've never given before, please consider, go onto the website, look at uwce.org, look up the Coastal Empire, see some of these, how your money really can impact our community. And please consider a donation, a volunteer time, just being an advocate, talking about it, sharing what you hear and sharing it with others. We're really just trying to get more people involved so that these numbers can just be as high as possible, because we know the need is there. We know we will be able to use it. We've seen that just in the monies that we've had and the additional monies that we've been asked to steward. So we are well aware.
Yeah, and I know that more people than you would think have that opportunity. I've been fortunate to live in this town for 22 years and worked for two employers, and both of them are very active in the United Way and basically give their employees every opportunity to donate and match funds. And of course, that Savannah Morning News here. I also did spend some time at Gulfstream. So, and I know there's a lot of other employers in town that do that. So it's if you're an employee of those companies, or any company here in town, don't hesitate to kind of check in and see what kind of opportunities you have within your own employers to work with.
Absolutely. And those, we've had some really positive meetings and positive responses from a lot of our larger corporate donors that have been very blessed. It was challenging years, but as some of them have said, it was the best worst year. In 2020 and now 2021, the feeling is be cautious, but it is also a positive feeling of how we can move forward and that being able to give back to the community like we know we should and could is really beneficial to all of the larger companies and the larger corporations. And then that will just, you know, come down to the individuals and to all of the residents that we can help.
I was going to add that I hear a lot from other United Ways. And when I look at how we compare, and you, we just went through a strategic planning process last year. And of course that involved a lot of comparing to other markets. And I think this region, this four county region is really special and unique in a lot of ways. And it comes down to the support and engagement of the community. It seems like folks here in this region still very much value the idea of coming together to make a difference. And, you know, the way you speak about it and the way you hear others speak about it and the fact that our campaign couldn't happen if there weren't an organized group of volunteers, our campaign cabinet, every single year. It is members of the community reaching out to members of the community for the benefit of the community through this entity, through this infrastructure that is the United Way. It belongs to the community, and it has been sustained, as we discussed earlier, decade after decade since 1938. And it's just a very special thing to watch happen, especially from this vantage point now, having always been the person with the tri-colored pledge card being put on my desk. I always gave because I believed in that whole idea, even though I didn't know exactly what United Way did. I trusted the leadership I saw involved with it, and I liked the idea. Now I see it from this vantage point, and I'm amazed at this region.
As we're looking ahead, let's take a look back. And that is, I know even before the pandemic hit, and Bryng, you started the job, I'm guessing about 5 or 6 weeks before it really kind of busted loose here, there was already a shift going on in how philanthropy just operated and in this country, even beyond that. What was that shift about, and how did that have to kind of evolve or change with the onset of the pandemic?
So it's something that has been being discussed at the United Way and among the United Way Network and United Way Worldwide. There are over 1,500 United Ways, and for a very long time, and in philanthropy in general, like you spoke of. But with United Way, there was a unique mechanism, which you've already touched on, which is the employee giving campaign. So the idea that a company can ask their employees to consider giving to United Way, and through payroll deduction, you know, somebody could give $1 a day or, you know, $5 a week or whatever amount they wished. And that was a unique thing for United Way for a really long time. And as philanthropy's changed, technology has changed the way people give dramatically. Different generations think about giving differently. There's so much more competition. And there were so many mergers and acquisitions and ways that locally based companies may be getting pulled up. Now they're owned by a company that's based in another state, in another country in some cases. And so their values might be a little different than perhaps they had been. So all of that was affecting our campaign here in the Coastal Empire, though. So while we compared favorably compared to a lot of other markets, we were still seeing decline. And so we had a strategic planning effort that is changing the way we're approaching. We're certainly holding on to those things that work best and still work today, but we're beginning to change the way we talk about campaigns. So one example is that it used to all fit very neatly from September to November. Everybody did their employee campaign September through November, and then you wrapped it up and you waited until next year. And that is not the case. Globally, nationally, there are a lot of employers that don't do their campaigns until January, don't report their numbers until late spring. And so just even in that, just responding to that has caused us to shift the way we're talking about our own campaign. So we want more people to give than have ever given before, so that we can help more people in more ways than ever before. And that's how we're talking about this campaign. And because it just doesn't fit in the same boxes that it always has.
But in keeping with that tradition, because that mm-hmm. is what Savannah and the Coastal Empire is very used to. And so we want to honor that and still continue. So this is the biggest push this fall campaign to get the word out there, to get all of our ducks in a row, if you will, so that mm-hmm. you know what needs to happen. And then from there, we will continue and be on that fiscal year and continue to fundraise through June 30th and then start again. But this is our focus, is our fall campaign. And this is the rah-rah shishkumbah time.
I'm so glad you said that. It is beloved by many. September is kickoff for United Way campaign. So that is definitely something we'll remain loyal to. And we will keep our focus, because truly most of the pledges, like you said, for our campaign are made September, October, November. And that is not different.
Raising money is part of it. Distributing the money is the other part. And I know that yes. has come into very sharp focus over the last year. I know United Way was tapped to help in terms of a lot of the money that was distributed from the federal government last year, whether it was CARES Act or ERA. Kind of talk about what that experience has been like, what were some of the challenges, and how did y'all address them relatively efficiently, right?
So if I may, I want to make sure that your listeners know our mission is to improve lives. And we do that by mobilizing the caring power of community. And what that looks like every day has been making grants to area nonprofits through a very thorough process that involves dozens of community volunteers. Every year, up to 80 or 90 people spend 4 months making those decisions based on applications we receive. And you mentioned earlier, that's 89 programs and 54 agencies this year. We have operated a 211 call center as part of our direct services of information and referral to help people find the programs or the services they need when they were in crisis or had a problem that they needed help with. And then we've had our county service centers, an office in each one of our counties, Liberty, Bryan, Effingham, and we have a volunteers or a department here, United Way Volunteers, that connects needs and agencies and companies and people to help solve all that. Well, in this pandemic, we recognized in March, mid-March, when we sent everybody home, one of the first things that happened was that our 211 call center just blew up with calls. It went from hundreds a week, which was manageable, to thousands all of a sudden. And that was hard to keep up with. And we were hearing already the issue of being laid off or furloughed or fired under these circumstances, and people needing help with rent, utilities, or mortgage. So our COVID-19 Rapid Response Fund raised money for those things to fill the gap. And because we built a system with 211 and team members mm-hmm. managing the applications, making sure people met the eligibilities for that help, the city and the county approached us in August of 20 to say, hey, can you help us distribute CARES Act dollars?
Because they knew we had that infrastructure. I mean, the infrastructure was there. It was something that, you know, we knew needed to happen early on. And so we did. And we were blown away by the amount of money that came in from the community just in that little amount mm-hmm. of time, just before government even started putting money out there, back out there. So we were very proud of what we had done. And that helped, I think, the county and the city realize that we have an infrastructure, we're a trusted organization, and mm-hmm. I mean, we were honored to be able to
scared able a little to, bit.
Yes, we were, but to move that money, because we knew, you know, with those 211 call centers, we knew who needed it. It was you know,
it was a match.
Perfect.
And we had a number of agencies, a number of nonprofit partner agencies that partnered with us in the distribution of those funds. While we had an MOU with the county or the city, then we partnered with them to help us get to them. We wanted to figure out how to move it as fast as we could into the economy. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to, you know, we were paying property owners and utility companies directly, mm-hmm. But on behalf of a resident. Thankfully, it worked out well enough that then in February of 2020, the county had ERA dollars, which is emergency rental assistance from the Department of Treasury, and they asked us to continue that work. So we have, but I'll share that it's been critical that we've partnered with other nonprofit agencies. We've learned a lot, but at the end of the day, we're thrilled to use this mechanism for this purpose, bringing the money in, making sure we get that money out. But we've pushed about as far as we want to push relative to any direct services in that space. And while others have maybe come to us and asked us to get creative on some other solutions, there are experts on the ground who deliver, whether it's homeless services, food distribution services. They're the experts. We try to fill in gaps where there are some, use our infrastructure to support our region and our community and our nonprofit partners, but they really are the experts on the ground every day.
Yeah. And I think this situation has kind of showed you there's gaps where you maybe didn't expect them. I know it's got to be impressive to see how many people have stepped up to assist over the last 16, 18 months. Am I correct in that assessment?
It's been very encouraging, honestly, especially being new in the position and being the incoming campaign chair. It's nice to really feel so encouraged and proud, frankly, of our region.
Make the pitch. I know that the campaign is ongoing, and Cecilia, obviously, you wrote a very nice op-ed, but if people want to give, if they want to get involved after they've listened to this, where do they go? How do they do it?
Yes, it's easy. It's uwce.org. There are several different ways that any of your listeners can give. There's always an option for a pledge or an individual gift, a corporate gift from a business. What Bryn was talking about earlier were employee campaigns. There are some employees, different individuals around town that want to give at a certain dollar level every pay period. If you give $3.50 a pay period for $15 a month, you can get a Caring Club card. And that gives you different discounts around retail shops around. Waffle House gives a free waffle in Market
Street. Free coffee.
It's great. So it really does pay for itself, but it's that donation of $182 if you are that individual. If you're a business owner and you don't have a lot of employees and you don't have a huge kitty for nonprofit and for donations, we have had others that have worked with us and they've hosted a weekend, with their customers, and they give a percentage of a discount or give back to United Way. We've had different individuals that have given smoothies or dollars from sandwiches or dollars from ice cream cones, all kinds of things. So there's so many different opportunities. I think those were the five, but there's mm-hmm. so many different opportunities for those who want to give. And I really do mean this when I say $1 to 1,000 to 10,000 to 100,000, every dollar counts, and they just add up. I mean, we looked at some of the different pockets, and like Bryn was saying, how we have looked at this in all kinds of ways, because you have to raise money differently when you have different circumstances. So we have to market differently and we have to look at things differently. And so what we realized is that everybody knows about it, but not everybody considers, oh, I need to give again, or I need to give in the same way, or I've been lucky enough and I've given at this, we'll call it a beacon level for 15 years. Let me try to raise Step it just up. A little. So yes, if you've been so blessed and you can share with others, we would love for you to do that. If in fact, and we've seen it, Adam, when we were talking about the rapid response earlier, there are those who gave were so generous, and those who needed it had never needed it before. And so it's just so impactful to see. So we hope that anyone that is in our listenership of these four counties will go to uwce.org and look at the different ways, and please offer some donation, something, and learn more about it. Be an advocate and hopefully be a volunteer in the future. But learn more about what we do here in the Coastal Empire to support this mission.
I can tell you, much to M Market's chagrin, I always come out ahead.
I'm so glad. Excellent.
That's drink great. Enough coffee to come
I
out.
I love that.
That's super.
I tell other people in the office, because we all live on coffee and journalism.
Well, right. Now you can get right. A waffle.
That's your secret.
We talked about that in all kinds of big groups with the city of Savannah, big groups with the teachers. Everyone's getting together to say, you know, oh, by the time we have our margaritas and our drinks and this, that, and the other. So yes, it pays for itself. It really does. But it is, it's little steps like that, that if we could impress upon anything, is participating in some way, shape, and form. If you can participate, we want you to, because we believe that that participation will bring in the dollars and the donors to sustain these counties. And we're so, so unique, and it's fun. We love being unique, and we love having our, mm-hmm. our community fund. And that's the money that we have to put into the community and to put into these nonprofit organizations. And it makes me feel very proud. So thank you.
Well, dollars and donors, that pretty much sums it up. Thanks so much for your time today. And
thanks for having us. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
All the best on this campaign.
Thank you, Adam.
Thanks again to Brendan and Cecilia, and to all those who work for and support the United Way of the Coastal Empire. We'll move on to talking about the Savannah Jazz Festival in a moment, right after I plug the best source for local news in Savannah. That's right, it's the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. What's the latest on the Forsyth Park Master Plan? How about the latest impact of COVID-19 on our local schools? What's going on with Georgia Southern football? Find the answer to all those questions and more by subscribing to SavannahNow.com, the digital version of the Savannah Morning News. You can get full access to our digital content for just $1 a month for the next 6 months. Go to SavannahNow.com/subscribe now and sign up. One of my wife and I's favorite Savannah events is the Savannah Jazz Festival. We pack up the beach chairs and a cooler and head to Forsyth Park for hours of great music. The 2021 edition of the Jazz Fest is this weekend. And while COVID has, for the second straight year, pushed it out of the park and onto a live stream, the lineup is still much anticipated. We are going to preview the event on both of this week's Commutes podcasts. We talked today with jazz vocalist Stephanie Nakasian, who is singing with the Savannah Jazz Orchestra in a Saturday night show. And you can listen to Thursday's episode for a conversation with festival stalwart Teddy Adams. With that, here's my discussion with Stephanie Nakasian. Very pleased and very excited to be joined on the commute today by Stephanie Nakasian, she's a diva. I mean, that's all you really got to know. It's not very often that I can claim to be talking to a diva here on the podcast, but Stephanie is going to sing with the Savannah Divas, who are partnering with the Savannah Jazz Orchestra for pretty much the keynote or one of the bigger concerts is taking place with the Savannah Jazz Festival, which is the 23rd through the 26th. So today's the 21st, so Thursday through Saturday. And Stephanie, I believe you all will be on stage on Saturday night.
It actually runs from Sunday, yeah.
Okay. Perfect. And thanks very much for taking the time to come on and talk with us. So I know that you are you're not the only diva, you're one of three divas.
Whatever.
And the three of you are singing together with the orchestra. Can you kind of tell people that are watching it, because again, the Jazz Festival there's going to be in-person audience, but it's largely going to be a streaming event for folks that are watching it streamed. What should they expect from the Savannah Divas playing with the Savannah Jazz Orchestra?
Well, for those of you who don't know Savannah, it's just this wonderful cultural town, brimming with talent and energy and optimism and love and great music and venues. And so when I live also in Charlottesville, Virginia, and when I came up here March of 2020 from Palm Beach, from a gig that was not to be, we visited the Good Times Club in Savannah, and there was Teddy Adams, and I was sitting in with him and meeting everybody and just fell in love with the whole vibe. And so I moved down here last December, and I've been here, like, you know, since then, and just enjoying the clubs and sitting in and doing some gigs. And last year I headlined at the festival on Saturday night with my own band, which was fabulous. And this year I'm now a local, and I've been blessed with this lovely title of diva and included in this great group. The band is fabulous. It's the best guys here. And the singers are also, you know, really well-known Savannah singers and known around the world. Priscilla is from, I've just met her, but she's been singing with the band quite a bit. And Cynthia Utterbach, I met at Good Times, and she's sung all over the world and a fabulous singer. So we're going to each do our little set. And then at the end, we're going to do a little surprise, like, thing all together. And it'll be fun.
So three powerful voices with a 17-piece band.
You got to be a powerful woman with a band like that.
It's going to blow some people away for sure. Give us a little bit of your background. Obviously, you were in the jazz world, one of the most easily recognizable. Can you kind of talk about how you got started in jazz singing and give us the arc of your career?
Well, I don't know how recognizable I mean, but anyway, I came to the jazz world in a funny way. I have an MBA from Northwestern in finance, international finance, and I worked on Wall Street and in currency trading. Mm-hmm. And I was doing that and kind of, you know, happy on one side and not so happy on another side, and met a piano player named Hod O'Brien, who was 20 years my senior and very well established as one of the great bebop jazz players in the world. And I went to hear him at this club called Gregory's every night and just started singing with him. And I just loved what jazz did for me. You know, it was spontaneous. It was very intimate with the audience. I had a lot of music background, but I didn't have jazz background. And I learned jazz. So we started doing gigs. And about a year later, I left my job on Wall Street to be a jazz singer.
Wow.
Okay, she's gone off the deep end. But it worked out pretty good. I mean, we were together 40 years. He passed away 5 years ago. And we have a wonderful daughter, Veronica Swift, who's now a very famous jazz singer. She's on tour with Chris Botti right now. And she was on the cover of Downbeat, blah, blah, blah. I could talk about her the whole day. But anyway, that's kind of what happened. I just got seduced into the world of jazz and the music and improvising. And so Cod and I toured a lot together all over the world and made our home in New York and then in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. And so that's how I got into it. And I also worked with John Hendricks for 2 years, and John was just had his 100th, would have had his 100th birthday. He was the probably the greatest scat singer and certainly greatest writer of vocalese of lyrics to jazz tunes. So I had a wonderful apprenticeship touring with him. It was fabulous.
So you came to jazz late, but you said you had previous experience. Was it church? Was it pop?
Well, I didn't sing professionally. I just was always in choir. I was always playing piano and violin. I didn't have classical voice lessons. I wasn't into opera at all, but I was into singing. Sang. My girlfriends would come every weekend and we'd sit around the piano and play, and I'd harmonize. Of course, in those days, there were lots of harmonies, you know, like Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young and the Carpenters and, you know, Earth, Wind and Fire. And I mean, it really was the Beatles, you know, it was just full of songs to sing. And we would go buy sheet music and then we'd sit around the piano and sing them and I'd harmonize. So it was a wonderful time for songs. And so that's, yeah, I always had music in my life.
When people hear you sing now, whether it's this Saturday night or another time, is it standards? Is it original music? What is your?
Well, I'm pretty much a melody person. Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I like the Great American Songbook. You know, I love it, and I love jazz. So I will sing, you know, Gershwin and Cole Porter, and of course Johnny Mercer, and as well as Fats Waller and Duke Ellington, and the kind of the jazz standards. Once it gets too far from melody, even though I do scat sing a little bit, I sort of lose it. You know, I need, I'm kind of square. I like 4-4, I like 3-4 time. I don't like when it goes into, as my husband used to say, hat sizes, you know, weird meters. I'm not advanced enough in my own brain about that, but I just like singing the songs. And I think probably people would categorize me as a crossover from, you know, cabaret to jazz, you know, but I sing standard straight ahead, and I love Ella Fitzgerald and, I don't know, Diana Krall and Sarah Vaughan and Peggy Lee and June Christie. And I've done tribute albums to a lot of singers as well. So, and that's what I teach. I teach about the songbook, because that's the, you know, those are our Picassos and Mozarts and, you know, Rembrandts of popular music.
You said you kind of stumbled into Savannah when you got here and you started to learn about the jazz scene, whether it was, you mentioned Teddy or Ben Tucker, who's unfortunately left us early. What kind of struck you about the jazz scene in Savannah, and what have you learned that maybe has surprised you about it over the last year or so?
Well, I had been to Savannah. I played with Ben Tucker in Hilton Head at the Jazz Corner, and also at the Hilton Head Jazz Society. And there was a club called Hannah's, and I played at Hannah's. It was must have been in the 90s, early 90s, before, I know it was before Veronica was born in 94. So, but I came to the Jazz Corner. I did in 99 because it was the first year that they opened. There's always been a warmth here, and you know, there's not this competitive kind of dog eat dog thing. It's really this lovely feeling of culture and sharing music and love, and everyone's very kind. And that's very attractive as a musician as well as a person. You want to be with musicians who want to try things and will listen to you and go your way, and you listen to them, and you make something new out of it. So that's what this environment feels like. And there's a great American songbook everywhere. You know, you go down on the Platte Riverside District, where I was doing brunches and doing, I did New Year's Eve last year with a great Gatsby show. It was so awesome. It was a little chilly up there, but it was great. It's just everybody had a good time. And this was like 20 somethings to 70 and 80 something. So it's just a town full of love for culture, I think, which is
right.
Wonderful. So welcomed me in. I loved it.
Yeah. So the Jazz Festival is going to be your second, but unfortunately it's been the two that have been COVID impacted. When you think about the whole idea of maybe next year, hopefully next year, playing in Forsyth Park in front of tens of thousands of people in the open air, how does that maybe change the dynamic versus playing at a venue like you're playing at this year?
Well, it's always different, every venue. I happen to like intimacy, so I love the clubs, but I've played in the big venues for the thousands, and it's you know, you don't sleep for a couple of days after that. The energy comes back at you, and it requires a little more energy output, especially in an outdoor venue. This one is indoor. Last year we had 50 seated. This year we have 125. So as long as you have live people to look at, that's good. I think singing for the camera was ridiculous. I did a lot of virtual concerts, and, you know, you're singing and you kind of you don't see people, so you don't feel it back. You see the little, you know, heart emojis going up, but
the thumbs up.
I think the best is person to person, you know, live music is the best. So I just hope we all, you know, do our job and get done what we have to do so we can all be safe. And, you know, that would be great. Great right. To go back. We miss that, you know, hugging and.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll be back to those days soon. But Stephanie and the Divas, of course, they're playing Saturday night. It is a 9:30 show. It's at if you're in person at Savannah Station, that is a ticketed event. So don't just show up at Savannah Station. But if you don't have a ticket, please go and check it out online. SavannahJazz.org will give you all of the information you need to stream it and link up with it. But Stephanie, it's been great talking to you, and all the best.
Excuse me. Is it 9:20 or 9:30, that show?
I'm looking at 9:30 on the jazz site, but okay. Just in case, log on at 9:20. I mean, it's only 10 minutes. I mean,
there's great music happening all weekends, and there's workshops, and I hope everybody will look into it, because there's some wonderful acts. There's blues. There's, you know, straight ahead jazz. There's all kinds, you know, so I'm going to have a ball, and I hope everybody will say hi on the internet at least, and come and hang out at some of the live venues. We certainly have live venue going on here. So
Well, thank you again, and all the best this weekend.
Thanks.
And, we'll cross our fingers that the next time we talk, we'll be looking ahead to a full show. But appreciate all your time.
My pleasure.
That's all for today's commute. Thanks one more time to our presenting sponsor, National Office Systems. Please support them as they support this podcast. If you enjoyed this episode of The Commute and want to hear more, download archived episodes on your favorite podcast app by searching The Commute with At Savannah Opinion. Thanks for listening, and stay safe out there.